Facebook, Google, Twitter, are they still censoring conservatives? We'll talk about that and a powerful testimony about the lasting effects of abortion.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, the governor of North Carolina called for a state of emergency because of a snowstorm. And I got to admit, I'm going to make a confession. I'm a New Yorker. I grew up with snow. You know, you have a blizzard and clear the roads and go to school and go to work. But lived out in New York for a while. I still enjoy the snow, the blizzard. But yeah, we've been grounded. We've been grounded. Our offices are closed. So I am doing a remote broadcast. So here's what it means. Everyone listening on radio, listening online, listening to my podcast, the exact same voice, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, the exact same everything except no live video feed today on YouTube and Facebook. Oh, yeah, I know. But just can't do that today. So broadcast goes on as always, 866-34-TRUTH, number to call, 866-348-7884. Before I get into an important subject with you today in terms of Facebook, Google, Twitter, and what they're doing to censor or restrict conservative websites, conservative voices, let me talk to you about an article that I wrote last night. You know, I write with everything that is, okay, so we're doing an audio feed on Facebook and YouTube. Okay, thanks, Matt, for clarifying that. So everybody's listening all the same, you just can't see me, which is good because I'm not ready for TV right now. I mean, I could just look a little better if I was going to be on TV, but since it's radio, here we are. Yeah, kind of more in like a sweats workout type of outfit. But I write articles, normally 4 or 5 articles a week, whatever's on my heart, whatever I feel the Lord wants me to address, we'll do that. And last night, I wrote an article not really knowing how much traction it would get. In other words, are people really going to resonate with this? Are people really going to say, yeah, I feel the same? I thought so, but I wasn't really sure. It's really basic. It's called Sorry, But Profanity Is Still Profane. If you didn't read it, it's on our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And it's just about the mainstreaming of profanity. It just seems to be everywhere. I noticed a few years back certain words being used more on broadcasts. You know, I'd listen to sports radio or something else, and I'd think, okay, that's since when did they start using that word? And then I'd notice, you know, looking on just a regular news page, like, oh, isn't that person nude from the back? And that since when did that become okay? It's more nudity, more profanity, just an increase in these things. And then with the president's comments, alleged comments about certain nations and using the S word. Now, look, plenty of presidents, for what we know, have used profanity. That's nothing new. But now everybody repeating it, and the news just repeating it. And now major news outlets, instead of blocking out some of the letters, they're spelling it out in full. And then I read that Saturday Night Live, they dropped the F-bomb live on the air. And so, okay, there are a lot worse things than this. I understand that. A harsh insult can do a lot more damage than profanity. And look, we're in the world. We're going to hear people talking like that all the time. You know, you're sharing the gospel with someone, they're cursing their head off. Well, whatever. You just listen to them and talk to them. Some of you in the workplace surrounded by it, or you're a non-believing family surrounded by it. I personally think, though, that there is something in terms of a degeneration of culture that comes with the increasing use of profanity. There's a reason it's not used in certain settings. There's a reason that, say, you're in school and the teacher doesn't start using profanity in, you know, in elementary school. Or, you know, even when I was in college, it was a rare thing that someone would use certain words. I can't remember other words being used at all. There's certain decorum. That's why certain words are censored on the air. They used to be. So it seems to me just to be a larger degenerating of culture, more profanity, more nudity. I don't see how that makes us any better as a people. So when posted on my Facebook page, it seems that the more, the less grasp we have of the language, the more we use profanity. But I guess the bigger issue then for me ends up being this, that when you see God's people engaging in it, when we don't have an issue with it, whereas I see God calling us to higher standards, to not let anything come out of our mouths that's not wholesome, Ephesians 4:29, to not let there be a hint of sexual immorality in our midst. So that's, you know, the whole nudity and the look, and everybody with their reports about they were sexually assaulted. I'm glad that the truth is coming out about this. I'm glad that the sexploitation of women is coming out. I'm glad that people are being held accountable for their actions. But do we need to read every detail? Do you need, you know, and they did this and they did, why? How is that helping? Let those things come out in other circles, or for us as God's people, okay, let's avoid that. And then the use of profanity, you know, coarse joking, for example, is not to be on our lips. Obscene talk is not to be on our lips, Ephesians 5 as well. So I see a calling for us to go higher and step higher. So in any case, I posted this article a number of different places. And again, as I mentioned, it is on AskDrBrown.org. And lo and behold, it's getting a lot of people amening it, a lot of people agreeing with it and sharing it. So obviously, hit a nerve here. Let's do what we can do, which is wherever we are engaging in the discourse, wherever we are engaging in the speech, let's set higher standards. The way we treat one another in the midst of our differences, let's set higher standards that glorify the Lord. Let me ask you this. Now I'm going to switch subjects. I'm on my little soapbox here, but I'm going to switch subjects in a moment. Okay, let's ask this. Have you ever been around someone for months? You work with them. You're on the same sports team with them. You go to school with them. You see them pretty frequently, only to find out after a number of months that they profess to be Christians. You're like, what? You? I had no idea. Now, it's one thing if you said, wow, he's a really sharp guy, very courteous, very nice to people, hardworking, seems just full of integrity. Or, boy, she just always has a kind word for people. And then you find out they're believers. You're like, yeah, okay, you stood out. But it shouldn't be that you're around someone for months, and when you find out they're a believer, like, huh? You're a believer? You know what it'd be like? It'd be like you hear someone screaming and yelling and getting, you know, nasty and all kinds of profanity and ugly words and insults and derogatory talk. And then you go, you know, who is this character? And then you go out for a meal together and they bow their heads and pray before they eat. You think, what? Something's not lining up. It shouldn't be the case with us. It shouldn't be the case that someone follows your social media feeds. They follow your posts. They follow the pictures that you post and the stories that you want others to look at or check out this video or the way you interact with others. It shouldn't be that based on that, they assume that you're a godless heathen only for you to say, oh, no, I'm a follower of Jesus. What? And you talk like that and you act like that and you recommend sites like that? So what we can do at least is be consistent. That's the role of being salt and light, to shine light, to be different, to set a better example, and then to just hope that that example changes hearts and impacts hearts. Okay, there's a great article by Jay Richards over at the Stream, stream.org. Google may come to regret its left-wing bias. And Dr. Richards, Professor Richards notes, Google is left-wing not just in its corporate culture, but in its politics. Its execs seem to believe that's not a problem, but they may want to rethink that. And he talks about the lawsuit being brought by fired employees James Damore and David Gutemann. This lawsuit has exposed Google's left-wing office culture, and it is wacky left. So far wacky left that I have asked, has Google lost touch with reality in certain ways? That's another article of mine, a recent article. But he notes this. Google doesn't just have a corporate culture problem. Its bias it biases its services against conservatives. Both Michael Brown and Prager University, for instance, have had videos blacklisted and demonetized by YouTube. Google is a subsidiary of the larger Alphabet holding company, which also owns YouTube. And he says this, conservatives have suspected for years that Google's searches, in other words, you type in, I want to find out about bunny rabbits. I'm looking for dog food. I'm looking for nice vacation places. You know, Google is the place where everybody searches. That's what has made it as powerful as it is. In that sense, it controls much of internet traffic because so many places you go because you did a search, right? How did you get to this website? Why? So I was searching for that. Okay, we do it all the time. Some of us multiple times a day. Well, Google influences searches. In other words, Google can boost you if they're happy with certain things, or they can demote you. So if you're looking for something, you know, I'm looking for top answers on this particular question, you know, best product for, you know, for thus and such. Well, I'm going to look at the first few websites listed, right? I'm not going to look 20 pages down. So if Google demotes you, you're demoted. And according to Jay Richards, and what we understand to be accurate, conservatives suspected for years that Google searches are also biased against them. Leo Goldstein's analysis in September showed the search engine seems to use an algorithm, which this is great, spelled A-L-G-O-R-E-I-T-H-M. Yeah, I've not seen that. Maybe that's common, but algorithm, I love it. For sorting searches on climate questions, and when it comes to news, Google search is heavily biased against conservative domains. So when you're searching for things, it's going to refer you much more to the left, to liberal websites, than to conservative websites. Yes. In other words, even you said, no, that's just based on which websites are more popular or where people are going more. Google's influencing that as well. And this has been proven out. Look, we've documented things, many have, with Facebook, where they basically just shut things down. You're reaching X amount of million people one week, and the next week it's a quarter of that. And there's no explanation except for just getting pushback on certain things that were posted. You think, how in the world did that happen? So here, this is reported. Corinne Weaver on lifenews.com. This was January 10th. Google censors six conservative media sites, treats them as fake news by posting warnings about their content. What? Yeah, we'll explain that. We come back on the other side of the break. Stay right here.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. Hey, listen, very, very important. In about 15 minutes from now, I'm going to be speaking with Ann Reed. She is a pro-life advocate. She works with a major conservative Christian ministry. And she herself years ago had an abortion and feels there's an important message for the church, from the church, to women who've had abortions. So it's going to be a very important interview. If you've had an abortion, if you still struggle with guilt and pain over it, if you're contemplating an abortion, please be sure to listen. One of my colleagues on his personal Facebook page will often post things, conservative point of view, about abortion, about homosexuality, and he continually gets blocked for it. Now, thankfully, when we were blocked at first, we were referred to someone within Facebook that was a good person to help, and every time we've been blocked, we've been reinstated, normally with apologies. But many others are not so lucky. And here, he posted this. This is one of several things he posted that got him blocked on Facebook. The view of the LGBT, letting go of biological truth crowd, so that's how he renames it, letting go of biological truth, letting go of biblical truth, letting go of biological truth crowd, is that if they actually believe and see themselves as the opposite sex, we are supposed to just believe them. Therefore, there is no deception involved. Pretty crazy, isn't it? Well, it's beyond crazy, totally narcissistic and depraved. They say that they are brave, but actually they are pathetic cowards who engage their delusions instead of trying to overcome them, which takes introspection, etc. So he goes on. It's a very strong word, but certainly the kind of thing you could post on Facebook. I mean, look at what is being posted about Christians day and night, negative stuff about Israel, about you name it. Everyone's going back and forth. Nope. Crosses a line, you get blocked. Oh, trust me, I've dealt with them and sent them link after link after link after this. Is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? Yes. Why? Because they're liberal. Because they're bashing Christians. Because they're bashing conservative views. Because they're calling for death to Israel. No problem. And then you get to a conservative post about abortion, about homosexuality. Blocked, banned. Yeah. What do? We keep pushing back. So here, Google, when you do a search, they are now saying, okay, here are reviews of these websites. In other words, people are saying, well, there's fake news here. There's some fake news here. So, for example, on the left, on a graph I'm looking at this article on lifenews.com, there is CNN, Huffington Post, New York Times, Politico, Slate, Rolling Stone, ABC News, Daily Kos, Washington Post, Time, all these liberal websites. Do any of them say that there are questions about them posting fake news? No. Now go to the conservative side. You have Breitbart, the Daily Caller, the Daily Wire. By the way, Ben Shapiro is the editor-in-chief of the Daily Wire. The Blaze, that's Glenn Beck's. Gateway Pundit, WorldNet Daily, WND, Joseph Farah. All of those are marked as potentially fake news websites. This is absolute bias. This is internet censorship. And look, YouTube on a regular basis is sending me notes after we protested a decision. Okay, your video is now approved. But also every day, we're getting this. Dr. Brown answers your questions. Oh, not appropriate for all viewers. What? Are you kidding? Dr. Brown answers your questions? Dr. Brown looks at the word. Oh, not appropriate. I mean, every single day, different videos get flagged. Then we have to request a manual review. And then if they go beyond a certain threshold of views, then someone will review them and then they'll tell us, okay, it's all right. And most of the time now they're getting it right in terms of what they're telling us is all right. But you know what it's like? It's like every day going to work, you get stopped by the cops 6 times, even though you haven't violated anything. And 5 out of the 6 times they say, okay, you can keep going. Is that good? Would you say, okay, that's nice? First, you shouldn't be getting stopped. And second, it should be 6 out of 6 times that you're exonerated and then you're not stopped anymore. So this is just ongoing. Here's another article on the stream. And this is Rachel Alexander confirmed Twitter shadow bans conservatives. Suspicions about Twitter's bias against conservatives have been fully confirmed by multiple employees and former employees. And breaks it down. This is internal that they would do this, okay? That they would shadow ban, which would mean that they are going to once again negatively influence the flow of information from conservatives to others. They'll ban certain accounts accordingly. And then here's another article on the stream. Facebook censors crowdsourcing for film on Roe v. Wade. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. There's a pro-life film. Jason Jones and John Zemirak report this. A pro-life film, the untold story of Roe v. Wade. People crowdsource. In other words, hey, get behind this. You can help. You know, like a GoFundMe kind of thing. And Facebook shuts it down. So what do? First, pray that our message will get out one way or another. Pray that God would expose the bias. And then every time this comes up, push back. I still believe that these companies, as big as they are, will be forced to do what's right. However, if they will not do what's right, then we keep proclaiming until they shut us out. And then God raises up alternate means of communication. All right. We are very near the annual March for Life on the 45th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And my dear friend and colleague, Larry Tomczak, who's been on the front lines of the pro-life movement for decades, joins us on the air now. Hey, Larry, thanks for being part of the show today.
Mike, it's an honor, and this is a critical time, but it's also going to be a very good time for the sanctity of life.
Larry, when did you first get involved actively in the pro-life issue?
Well, Mike, after I graduated from college, I was working across from the White House at the AFL-CIO headquarters in Washington, D.C., and I was thrust into the political realm. I didn't know what was all going on, but I was touching base with people. I remember sitting at a table and Ted Kennedy was next to me. I bumped into Richard Nixon when he was president. But one day I opened up the front page of what was called the Washington Star. It's non-existent now. And it said Roe v. Wade. It was the headline that abortion on demand was legal. And I remember immediately I was stunned and I thought, we were caught off guard. How did this happen? And we were part of a large youth ministry of about 2,000 young people. And so I went immediately and I did a study on abortion and life before, you know, in the womb. And we distributed materials to our young people and said, we can't be silent. Well, the scary thing, Mike, is since then, I mean, I've been, you know, with Operation Rescue. I was once arrested with Melody Green and others for marching peacefully. And we've been involved for 46 years now in so many activities to proclaim the sanctity of life, call people to adoption, pregnancy centers, speak up for the unborn. And now we've got this Friday an opportunity for us all to either be there in Washington, D.C. for the 46th annual, and may it be the last March for Life. So there is a major event. And if you're in reasonable driving distance, please be there, because I've been there 20 times with my family, and I do it because, Mike, as you know, and everyone listening today, Scripture's clear. Proverbs 31 says, open your mouth for the speechless in the cause of all appointed to destruction. Open your mouth, judge righteously, plead the cause of the poor and needy. We must pray. We must proclaim truth about the unborn, and also do whatever we can in terms of political involvement. And I'm part of Intercessors for America, Mike, and honestly, we're doing everything we can to stir people and motivate them to be a part of the March for Life, because, folks, 91-1 is the current figure. For every U.S. soldier who died in battle in our history, there have been 91 babies who have died by abortion. And, Mike, my heart aches when I consider this, and you may have seen it, but Planned Parenthood, they just released their, you know, annual report. And folks, $98.5 million they made in profit. They have, listen to this, they received $543 million in our tax dollars. There were 321,384 abortions that they performed. And the majority we know are among inner cities and blacks and minorities. It's genocide. And they have the gall to say on Martin Luther King Day, oh, we're carrying on the dream of justice for all. And we must, in a right spirit, push back with our prayers, our involvement. And an opportunity is going to be this Friday in Washington, D.C., in the 46th annual March for Life.
Yeah, you know, Larry, you put most of us to shame in that you had a conscience of this from day one. I hardly even remember talk about it in the church where I got saved, you know, got saved the end of 71. We really had no social conscience at all. It was a few years after that I was part of a church that got involved with pro-life. So this was, you know, beginning 77, 78. But you were on it from day one. I remember watching an Operation Rescue video, and it shows you and Melody Green and others being arrested. And I was stirred by that example. But Larry, we've just got a minute. I'm as much as I know the stats, I'm sitting here devastated by what you're saying. You've been involved all these years. Is the tide turning? Do we have reason for hope?
Yes, Mike, everyone, let's be in faith and optimistic. Last year, the March for Life was the largest attended one ever. We have key speakers, Vice President Pence and others. We know through sonograms people are being educated, and they're seeing this is life before birth. We're done with President Obama and his, well, it's above my pay grade comment to slip out, and his God bless you over Planned Parenthood. And we've got leaders that are righteous. We have, I believe, millennials that are seeing a cause. And it's time to get involved I encourage us all, pray,
complain,
and participate.
And friends, if you can't be there, be in prayer that the word will get out, shake the nation. God bless you, Larry, for all that you do.
Thank you.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This Friday, January 19th, that will be the 46th annual March for Life in protest against Roe v. Wade. Just had a friend comment to me that for every one American soldier killed in battle in our nation's history, 91 babies have been aborted. A sobering subject, a grievous subject, a subject dear to God's heart, and one that we must approach with extreme sensitivity, because not only are we standing up for the life of the unborn, we are standing up for the mothers in particular, the fathers as well, that choose to abort. But many women who have had abortions, if you have these millions and millions, tens of millions of babies who have been aborted, since some women have had multiple abortions, many just one abortion, you're talking about tens of millions of women who've had abortions, many of them carrying scars for life, some of them even as Christians still feeling the pain of it. How can we address this? How can we minister to this crisis in our society holistically? I'm joined today by Ann Reed. I met Ann when I was doing some work earlier this year with a major conservative ministry. She began to share some of her testimony with me as she works in that ministry, which is on the front lines of the major moral and cultural issues today. And as we talked, I said, you need to come on the air and talk with me about these things. So welcome with me to the Line of Fire, Ann Reed. Ann, great to have you on the air today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Brown. I've been looking forward to it all day, a little nervous, but ready to go.
All right. Well, wonderful. So Ann, right now, just give our listeners a picture of what life is like for you. What are you in the middle of in terms of your life and ministry? What kind of Christians are you surrounded by?
Well, as you said, I am a part of a major conservative Christian organization. I am a writer. I write for our print magazine, and the name of the organization is American Family Association, and we do have a print magazine. It's called the AFA Journal, so I write for that print publication, and I also write blogs for our online platform, which is afa.net.
So you're in an environment with other pro-life Christians that are on the front lines of the pro-life movement. And yet there's a burden you carry that does not always get expressed. So why is this so important to you in your own life?
Well, I have been doing post-abortion ministry for about 10 years now. And I got involved with that because I myself am post-abortive. And when I first began walking with the Lord, when I first began to just receive His grace and let His grace pour into me, He would not let me continue without dealing with that subject matter. It's something that I had kind of pushed down into the hidden recesses of my heart for years, a good 15 years or so. And when I began really just receiving His grace and begin that walk with Him, He would not allow that hidden thing to remain hidden. He wanted to deal with that with me because He didn't want there to be any hindrance in relationship for us, between us. And one of the things that is kind of a burden for me, well, not kind of, very much a burden for me, is because I see that a lot in the church among women. Most of the women that I've walked alongside of in terms of post-abortion recovery are women in the church. And usually those women, it's been 10, 20, 30, even 40 years that they've been, going to church services and kind of checking off the boxes that we might check off as Christians. But that is a hidden thing that's hindering their relationship with the Lord, and they're not necessarily in a real relationship with the Lord. They're just checking off those boxes and doing the Christian thing, but they don't really have a real intimate relationship with the Lord because of that.
So it's the kind of thing that you really can't talk about in certain ways, or people may not know what to say, and maybe they don't want others to know that they themselves had an abortion, and so they kind of live quietly with this pain. Maybe they think, well, this is just my lot in life,
exactly.
because I did this. So Anne, how does this intersect with your own life personally in terms of your own history?
Well, we're all different. God created us very uniquely, very differently. But one of the commonalities for women who have had abortions, the initial feeling is a sense of relief because the pressure is off all of the reasons that a woman chooses abortion, that it's lifted immediately. However, that only lasts for a very short period of time, and then a woman begins to numb herself in order that she doesn't have to think about it, she doesn't have to feel that pain. Some women use drugs and alcohol. That's not really my story. I was, for me, it was more of a hardening that took place. It took me probably a year or two after the abortion when I realized, hey, something's wrong with me.
How old were you when you had the abortion? 17 years old.
Yes.
And did you feel like you had a relationship with the Lord at that point, or were you not even considering yourself a believer?
No, I had considered myself a believer when I was a teen, and there were some things that happened in my life, some hypocrisy and things that I kind of viewed in my own personal life with some leaders in the church. And so I got to this place where I didn't really believe in Christians anymore, but I still believed in God. But after I had the abortion, that shifted, and I became an agnostic after that. I didn't realize it at the time. I realized it years later during my healing process that the reason that shift took place is because I couldn't reconcile, what I had done. If the Creator created this life inside of me and I chose to take that life, I couldn't reconcile that.
And what was it? So we can understand this because you can't often talk through these processes because it's too difficult for people. Since God's done a deep work in your life and now you're ministering to others and helping them, we can talk about this, but let's get in your shoes. You're 17 years old. You may not be a fervent believer in Jesus, but you believe in God. You certainly have major questions about abortion. Now you're pregnant. You don't want to have a baby. You can't, whatever the circumstances are. But tell me about the process of considering abortion, deciding to have an abortion. What did that feel like?
Well, my story is, of course, everybody's story is different from everyone else's, but I don't have a lot of excuses, Dr. Brown. A lot of women do. A lot of women were coerced, a lot of situations. For me, I became sexually active when I was 15, and of course, I knew at that time I could get pregnant, And I decided at that time when I was 15 that if that would happen, I could always fall back on an abortion. So for me, it was different. It wasn't when I became pregnant at 17, I struggled with that decision. The decision had already been made. I had already decided that when I was 15. So when it happened at 17, it was just like, boom, okay, this happened. Now I follow through with the decision that I made 2 years ago.
Remarkable.
And that's what I mean by I don't have any excuses.
Yeah. So, all right.
No excuses.
No, but look, there are many others that think this way as well, that abortion is the solution for, Planned Parenthood, right? It's not planned. It's not. So that's just the solution. So you do what you want to do and you don't really have to face the consequences.
Exactly.
When was it that you became conscious of a hardening of heart or of an alienate or something wrong after the abortion?
It was probably a couple of years afterwards. Now, I wasn't able to put it together completely, like what I'm able to describe now.
Yes.
It was a couple of years after that I realized something's wrong with me. I can't cry. I should cry when this happened to me. I should have cried when that happened to me. I can't laugh. I could smile, but I couldn't laugh. And I knew something was wrong with me for years, but I didn't know what it was. I had no idea it had anything to do, with that abortion.
Wow, amazing. All right, so you become an agnostic, then you come to faith. Did this hang over your head now now that you're recognizing what had happened in the past? What was that like as a believer?
Well, it was a key part of my coming to Christ, actually. when I began, taking some steps toward the Lord and receiving His grace, first began to go to church, I realized during one of those church services that, again, something's wrong with me. I can't receive what that pastor is saying. I know he's standing up there. I know he's telling the truth, but it's like it would not penetrate. I could not receive it. Something is wrong with me. So during the altar call, I went up there. It wasn't like I went up there to say, I want to ask Jesus into my heart. I went up there to say, hey, pastor, I need you to pray for me. Something is wrong with me. My heart is hard. Will you please pray that my heart will be softened?
And how old were you at this point?
I was in my mid-30s. Mid-30s.
Got it. And from what you've seen now, Anne, as you have now ministered to other women and been involved with this, how common is it that women are suffering trauma from abortion as believers? You know, when I got saved, I had done wicked things, stolen money from my own father, broken into a doctor's office with a friend. I was a liar. I was a rebel, just an ugly person. And the Holy Spirit had been convicting me, and I felt miserable. But then when I got saved, the guilt was gone, literally was gone. I couldn't find it. I looked for it, and I couldn't find it. I was 100% forgiven by the Lord. I would just assume, my naive approach to things, okay, a woman had an abortion, she gets saved, and she knows she's forgiven, and she goes on, and everything's fine. For many women, it's not so easy, though.
Yeah, it really isn't. Women really, really struggle. And even walking women through post-abortion recovery, sometimes at the end of it, I know God is ultimately responsible for what happens with those women, but there have been times where, we go through 8 to 10 weeks, and at the end of it, I just feel like a failure. Like, she didn't get it. She went through these 10 weeks, and she didn't get it. She didn't get that she's forgiven. So it can just be, a very difficult journey for women to come to terms with, the fact that God has forgiven them. And I hear women talk a lot about they just can't forgive themselves. I try to be very sensitive with that. What supersedes that is receiving God's forgiveness. Because in actuality, I could have forgiven myself for those 15 years before I received God's forgiveness, but that could have been me justifying it. And I find that oftentimes that's what women will try to do. They'll try to find a way to justify what they did. So that's just not the answer. The answer is coming to terms with how sinful it was, and yet.
Not lessening the guilt, facing it head on, and then receiving forgiveness. Right. We come back. I want Anne to talk to you, our listeners. Stay tuned.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, there's no question that the tide continues to turn gradually in the direction of pro-life in America, as much as the radical feminists are up in arms, as much as Planned Parenthood is trying to fight back. The tables are turning little by little, and people are seeing sonograms and recognizing the humanity of the child in the womb. The horrors of some of Planned Parenthood's activities are coming to light for more and more. And even young people, more and more embracing a pro-life mentality. The fact that so many babies have been slaughtered in the womb is horrific, is unimaginable. At the same time, we continue to see progress and pushback. Many other nations in the world with lots of abortions, there is no voice like there is in America pushing back against these things. So it's grievous, but be encouraged. This Friday is the 46th annual March for Life protesting Roe v. Wade. I was told last year's was the biggest ever. Vice President Pence addressed everyone. We'll be doing so again this year. If you're anywhere near D.C. and can get out there, great. Otherwise, pray for maximum impact for the event. One of the most impactful calls we got all of last year was from a Christian woman who worked at Planned Parenthood because she needed a good job to supply funds for her and her child. At that point, she was a single parent. She called in tears, under conviction, She never went back after that day when we talked on the air. Other Christians reached out to her. She's thriving and doing well. And extraordinary. The pain she experienced as a Christian working there. Well, what about the pain of the women who've had abortions? My guest, Ann Reed, herself had an abortion when she was 17 and now has devoted much of her time to ministering to women who've had abortions. And right before the break, you said that rather than just trying to get a woman to forgive herself, she needs to recognize the reality of what she did, the sinfulness of it, so she can receive forgiveness from God. And with that forgiveness from God, can forgive herself. We've had women call the show, and I'm talking about 30 years after an abortion, and we're talking about this subject. They want to share their story, and they break down crying on the air 30 years later. And some of them say, look, I know I'm forgiven, but this still hurts. Yeah. This is something really only a mother can understand. I mean, as much as I try to be empathetic, I can't experience it the way a mother experiences it. So talk to some women now listening that have had abortions that are still struggling. Minister some things that you have found to be really important in helping them find wholeness in the Lord.
Well, one of the things that was really impactful for me as I was going through this healing process was our inability to receive God's forgiveness for this sin can actually be a form of idolatry. Sounds kind of crazy, I know, but when we take any sin of ours and we place it in a position that is beyond what Christ did on that cross, then we're idolizing that sin. We kind of think what we'll tend to do is think, well, I've got to pay for what I did, so there's no way that I can receive forgiveness and live this life, this abundant life, and this life of freedom, because I've got to pay for this. No, you don't. That's what Jesus did. Jesus paid for that.
In other words, as ugly as it is, it's still something that Jesus paid for. It's not in a unique category.
Absolutely.
There are people in jail who are former murderers and are enjoying freedom in the Lord, even though they consciously took the life of an adult human being. So why shouldn't a woman who had an abortion receive that? Now, when you say that to someone, they may think you're making me feel more guilty, but obviously this is a key to their freedom.
Yes, absolutely. And there is something just so important. I know we've already touched on this, but do I have a couple of minutes?
We're good. Go for it.
Okay.
Go for it.
I'm just going to share a little bit about something huge that happened in my life at the very beginning of this walking this thing out with the Lord, and he was beginning to just kind of open up the doors and lead me into healing on this. Now, keep in mind, for 15, 16 years I had never spoken of this. It was buried down, way down in the darkness of my heart. And one Saturday I decided I was going to watch. Just kind of last minute, I was flipping through the channels, and I stopped on this program about abortion. And it took a huge amount of nerve for me to even just stop there and watch it. And so they were discussing abortion, and they showed this image. It was very much a graphic image, and I hope I'm okay with describing what it was.
Go ahead.
But it was a bucket that was full of aborted babies. So when I looked, to this day, I cannot tell this story without crying, so excuse me. When I looked at that image, I looked at that, and my eyes just zeroed in on all of these tiny little hands. And when I saw it, I saw myself for who I really was. All those years I had been running from who I really was, from what I had really done. And amazingly, and when I tell that, it might sound as though, oh, that is so terrible. It's so terrible she experienced that. But it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I saw myself for who I was. I saw myself as this wretched sinner. Before that, I'd never seen myself that way. So I saw myself in truth. And at the same time, in that very moment, Christ shone his light on me, and he turned everything, all of that darkness, he turned it into light. It was a miraculous moment when I looked at that truth.
Wow. So, again, it's the same process, the deep conviction brings deep forgiveness and relief. Like Spurgeon said, the convicted criminal about to be hung with the rope around his neck, who's pardoned, has a deeper sense of gratefulness and appreciation because of that. So God did this deeply in you. You've been burdened to help other women walk this out. What would you say, though, to someone listening right now who's right in the middle of contemplating abortion? And you know, in your case, it was just promiscuity and, all right, here, birth, you know, whatever, if I don't want the baby, don't want the consequences of sex, fine. With many other women, there's a whole different decision. You know, they're thinking, okay, my kids don't have enough food. My husband left the house. I'm on my own. If I have another child, how can I provide? I can't stay home and be with the baby. You know, and they're wrestling with these things, and they're actually thinking maybe abortion is the most compassionate thing I can do. It's the best thing I could do for my family or even for my own mental, you know, welfare. What would you tell someone really contemplating, wrestling with abortion for those reasons?
Well, I would encourage you to do the same thing that I did, is to face the truth in those moments. Don't allow yourself to listen to the lies that, you know, the media tells us that this is, you know, your choice and this isn't really a baby and those types of things. Go look for the truth. What are we really talking about here? And put your eyes on Jesus. He will provide for your needs, whatever they are. If you will center your attention on him, whatever those needs are, he will provide for you. And whatever, it sounds simplistic, I know it does, but if you will, and he even will put believers in your life. If you can go to a crisis pregnancy center, people who live and breathe this stuff, who want to reach out to women who are in a situation like you are, who want to save babies and who want to help you. There are people across this country that's what they live and breathe, and they want to help you. So let yourself be helped by others, and let this be a time of growing more intimate in your relationship with the Lord, and let him provide.
And Ann, you've been writing about these things. Is there a place where folks can go to follow your writings on this or ministry that you're doing? What would be the best place, especially for women right now that say, boy, you're talking to me. I'd like to find out more.
I do have a website. It's lifeawakened.org. So if you go there, you can actually, I do have some blogs and things there. I've got a video there that would speak directly to you. And you can contact me. I would love to, just be there for you. Maybe I can get you in touch with someone in your local area that could help you out and maybe get you into a Bible study and that type of thing. I would love to do that.
Well, Ann, I'm so thrilled that you're doing this. Again, the website, lifeawakened.org. Be sure to check that out. Maybe you can refer a friend there. Maybe you know someone that this is very relevant for. And so much of this is under the surface in the church, friends. I think we'd be shocked to know how many women are still hurting in this way. And maybe we've been a little bit tone deaf to it, to address it. We're rightly addressing often the sin of abortion, but not recovery, forgiveness, wholeness for those who've been guilty of the sin in the past. So let's be sure to preach the full gospel message. Again, the website, lifeawakened.org. And hey, Ann, we worked together on an article. When's that happening?
That should be coming out here in about 2 or 3 weeks. Should be coming out in our print publication and online as well.
All right, and where will folks find that?
That will be afajournal.org. O-R-G.
All right, afajournal.org. When I was doing ministry at AFA last year, just had a great time with their wonderful team. Ann did an interview of me, my past, and God's work in my life, and then put it together, edited it. So I'm eager to read Ann's story about me as well. Hey, God bless. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brown. I sure do appreciate it.
Sure thing. All right, friends, let's really be in prayer. Again, March for Life this Friday. If you can't physically be there, which of course most of the country are not going to be able to get there, pray for impact, for spiritual impact, and pray that God would shake the media. I remember when I was in D.C. and part of these very things, we'd watch the news. And it would be the last item at the end of the day, and then they'd interview two protesters against us, two on our side, even though it was like 250,000 to two. May truth triumph. May life triumph. Back with you tomorrow.